This is the Education Gadfly Show.
Rick Hess.
Mike, a little risque, baby.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man whose bulge has never been on Twitter, Rick Hess.
Mike, a little risque, baby.
You know, yeah, I had to figure out a way to work that in.
I'm glad
I wasn't going to call you the Congressman Wiener of the education reform space, because that would be completely unfair.
I'm glad we got no Fordham interns here for the show today. Yes. Otherwise, that would be one of those uncomfortable work environment things you're always lecturing me about.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, last
week, when I started taking off my shirt and greasing up before the show last week.
That was embarrassing. It was kind of embarrassing when a certain person on the show was making fun of psychology majors last week, and one of our interns was a psychology major.
Who was doing that?
Amber.
Hold on. You were the psych major, or you're making fun of them?
She was making fun of psych majors.
And we had a psych major in here?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes. Not so good. But anyways, so we try to only offend people that are not in the room with us instead of the people right here with us. Anyways, you and Daniela were having a spirited discussion about the new X-Men movie. Sounds like it's a good one, Daniela.
It's fantastic. Mm. Highly recommend.
Where did they come from? This wasn't one of these old-timey cartoons, was it?
Started in the 60s.
Classic comic book.
Oh, it was a comic
classic
book.
Classic comic book.
How did I miss this? I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s.
They were huge. X-Men were giant.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Are you sure?
Bigger than the Fantastic Four, baby.
I don't know who they are either.
Wow.
You have two boys.
Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, not X-Men. I don't know.
Dude, but these are team superheroes. You're doing like the one-off little guys who run around like on their own.
Okay.
These are the dudes who have real issues.
Okay.
Who have torrid, hateful love affairs. Who get all up in each other's grill. Okay. This is comics, man, for kids.
It's like the soap operas of.
I see. Yeah. It's like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay. Anyway, Mike, you know, when I was teaching, I did have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle water bottle that I dearly loved.
Yeah. I've gone as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle for Halloween a couple times.
Which one?
Just generically. I don't remember. Michelangelo? I don't know.
I always preferred Leonardo.
I like Leonardo. Raphael was good, too. It was kind of tough, cutting edge, you know, mm-hmm. hard line kind of personality. I like mm-hmm. that.
Very good. All right, we'll have to dress up as our favorite.
I think the Turtles could have totally whumped on the Transformers if they tried.
Disagree, but that's a conversation for another day.
It is, because we have too much to cover now to go into this anymore. It is time to play Pardon the Gadfly. Daniela, let's get started.
Okay, question number one. Michael Weinerup says that it's crazy that Montgomery County, Maryland has to turn down federal Race to the Top funds because its longstanding teacher evaluation system doesn't include test scores. Is he right for a change?
Not only is he right, I want Rick to take back what he said before the show. You said, I hate Michael Weinerup.
I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of Michael Weinerup or the New York Times.
All right, but in this case, I think he makes a fair point. Makes a fair point, by which I mean he wrote a supposedly, you know, objective article that's clearly his opinion, which is that it was ridiculous that Montgomery County couldn't participate in Race to the Top unless it wanted to change its teacher evaluation system. And I think on this case, he's probably right. I mean, look, I don't know a ton about the Montgomery County system. It sounds like there's some evidence that they actually do remove ineffective teachers as a result of the evaluations. But, you know, here we are with this obsession about getting test scores into evaluations, or saying that it's got to be 50% of the evaluation. I mean, for God's sake, people, why do we have to be so prescriptive?
Let me suggest a larger point, which is that when Race to the Top was pushed out in summer of 2009, I seem to remember a couple of folks writing about this. I think their names were Petrilli and Hess, mm-hmm. pointing out mm-hmm. that there were problems with glomming on to kind of the craze of the month, baking this into requirements for federal grants, and insisting everybody who wanted a piece of $4 billion to promise to do some stuff, whether or not we knew how to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a fundamental problem in trying to transform teacher evaluation and compensation by not asking folks to do stuff that they can actually show generates results mm-hmm. or actually identifies low performers, but by fetishizing the use of test scores.
Maybe we should be against anyone who says they're going to transform education from Washington.
Mm.
In fact, I think that's a useful voter guide. If your candidate says he or she will transform education, you should vote against him.
If they'll transform it from Washington.
Yes, that's right.
I'm all for people actually transforming education who, you know, actually do education.
Yeah. All right. So if your school board president vows to transform your local school district, maybe it's okay. All right, topic number two.
Okay. The Republican governors in Ohio, Wisconsin, and Florida have seen their popularity slide after tangling with the teacher unions. Does this show that tough love school reform is unpopular?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Mr. Peddler of tough love school reform? It says,
yeah.
Take Rick Hess's advice and you will soon be out of office.
Well, there is an unfortunate dynamic here, which is that we live in a country where people believe in getting lots of good stuff for free with no pain. And the problem with actually tangling with teacher unions and dialing back collective bargaining rights is that you're inflicting pain because it's the right thing to do.
All right. So Scott Walker has seen his popularity go way down. John mm-hmm. Kasich in Ohio. Governor Scott in Florida. And the question is this necessarily a problem for them? Or do they have plenty of time before their reelection campaigns for this to bounce back?
That's the question.
Yeah. I mean, this same thing with President Obama, right? I mean, he got shellacked in the midterms. But the assumption was that by the time 2012 comes along, it's enough space between Obamacare and the election that it won't hurt him too much. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Though, actually, I mean, I'd hesitate, actually. I mean, I'm not crazy about that parallel. I'm much more fond of kind of, say, Paul Ryan plan, getting the Republicans banged around in the New York special election the other week. Because, look, I mean, what these guys are doing is they're asking people to bite the bullet and make hard choices that are going to be unpleasant and that only yield big benefits downstream. And Obama has sold health care reform very explicitly as offering lots of goodies up front.
All right. But I think it's a little bit hard to say. I mean, these governors are not asking for widespread pain and sharing of pain. They're saying, let's stick it to the teachers unions and make them pay more for health care and make more for their retirement and to have fewer bargaining rights and to get, you know. I mean, so none of this is exactly saying to the taxpayers, hey, we want you to share in the, you know, the difficult choices. They're basically saying, you know, help us, go after these special interests that we think have, turned things upside down.
Mm. Well said.
All right. Bottom line, don't follow Rick's advice if you want to get reelected. Okay, topic number three.
Okay. Andrew Coulson at Cato has a new report out this week finding that philanthropists are no better at picking winners and losers than the government. What does this mean for philanthropic giving to education?
All right. So this study was of CMOs in California. Basically, he showed that the highest performing charter schools in the state were not getting much philanthropic support.
And is this on a per pupil basis or total giving?
We're not quite exactly sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Jay Green wrote about this and has been making this case that, look, we're all for rich people giving away their money to education reform, but it does show that when you have these large organizations who think they know best, they often develop this hubris, and they don't know best. They can't pick winners and losers, and we should let the market decide.
I wonder if Coulson's report had a big picture of Mike Piskel's face on the cover being like, told you so.
You want to explain that for our listeners?
Well, Mike Piskel was the founder of ICEF, Inner City Education Fund in L.A., which had terrific performance numbers, but always the trouble raising bucks.
Yeah, and eventually almost went bankrupt.
And, Mike all the way was like, man, how come all these other guys are getting the big dollar philanthropic love?
Is it true or false that you enjoy drinking at late night bars with Mike Piskel?
Yes.
Yes. I saw you do it. You're just myself, my own eyes, a few weeks ago.
I believe you were there, too.
I think so. But see, now, this is the argument, though. I would question at least Jay's interpretation of this. I'm not quite sure if Andrew said this or not, about let the market choose. I mean, here the whole argument is that these schools are, the schools that got a lot of money did not perform as well on standardized tests, which seems to be a very different question than what would happen if you just let the market decide. Because, we know that in the free market of education, a lot of parents will choose schools that don't necessarily have the highest test scores.
Well, I don't understand the market. I mean, venture capitalists, by this argument, are distorting the market, too, because they're choosing to invest in some firms and not others.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So is the argument that somehow if they invest in firms that aren't doing well, that they're anti-market
Well, entities? But in the private sector, there are big consequences. If you invest in the wrong companies, then you make a lot less money than if you invest in the right ones. If you're a staffer at the Gates Foundation or New Schools Venture Fund, I don't know that it matters much to you personally whether you pick the right one or not.
Mm.
And this lies in, this is a fundamental problem with applying these market principles to education, is that we're not actually comfortable with people getting rich in education reform. And so if you take that away, then a lot of the dynamics disappear.
So a hugely relevant piece here in terms of discipline is if you're a grant officer at a foundation and your investments do poorly, what happens to you internally at the foundation? How does it impact your career and your evaluation?
Right. And I suspect the answer is not at all. Okay, that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you, Daniela.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, it's now everyone's favorite time, Amber Winkler's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Amber, have you been out to the movies lately?
I went to see Bridesmaids. It's a chick flick.
That was a good chick flick.
Yeah, that's right. I thought it was good. There were a couple of hilarious scenes.
Oh, yeah. Me and Jolene did that and A Hangover 2 back to back.
Oh, okay. As long as you went with Jolene, that makes me feel better.
A couple scenes were hilarious, but it got a little bit gross. I don't know. It's, I guess,
very gross.
Yeah, whatever.
Really? Gross in a chick flick?
Yeah, it did. Well, because it's the same Hangover guys that were like...
No. You know what it is? It's Knocked Up. It's what's his name?
Oh, Knocked Up guy. Okay, yeah.
Why am I drawing a blank? Seth, not...
Brogan?
Judd Apatow. Thank you. Oh, thank God for the producing booth. Otherwise, we would be flailing in ignorance.
Yeah? So is this a sort of a way to sneak in a conservative message about marriage in this one? Last one was a conservative message about
This was a way
abortion,
to sneak in a chick taking a duty in the street in a wedding dress.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's right.
And somebody getting her head thrown up on while she was thrown up.
Right, big highbrow messages out of this movie.
Yeah, you start off by saying you love the movie.
Well, it's funny, but it was no moral message to it.
All right, well, what is the moral message of Amber's Research Minute this time?
Well, I will say, let me just say this. Before we saw that in Hangover with Friends, and everybody was split on whether the Hangover or Bridesmaid was actually more amusing.
Okay.
Nice doubleheader, huh? Ah, the life of those without children.
Yeah.
Okay. All right,
now
Amber.
Now on to research studies. Yes. We have a draft paper out by folks at the University of Houston that examine the impact of gifted and talented programs on achievement. So, you know, we hear a lot about struggling kids. We finally get a paper about gifted kids. A large urban school district in the Southwest, it is unnamed, by the way. This is the place where analysts examine the achievement of roughly 4,000 students in seventh grade who were evaluated for gifted services in the fifth grade. This particular district, this is kind of unusual. They examine all students in kindergarten and fifth grade for gifted services, regardless of the school they attend or their prior gifted status. So everybody gets evaluated. The study creates two groups of students for comparison. One group that scored right above the cutoff for admission, who made it into the program. The other that scored right below the cutoff and didn't make it in. So bottom line, we're looking here at the impact of gifted students on sort of kids at the margin. They're not the whole spectrum. The findings, participation in the gifted program yields academic improvement for middle schoolers in language and social studies, but not math or science. They conclude that gifted programs are particularly effective at improving verbal skills, but not math. They also find that kids benefit most from gifted programming in their weaker subjects. So students who are strong in math achieve higher gains in reading. Students stronger in reading benefit more in math. That's pretty much it.
Wow. So this is promising.
Yeah, promising stuff. I mean, it was a very rigorous study. I actually read the draft, but the eventual paper is an NBR paper that is a little bit different, but a lot of similarities.
So what's the bottom line?
So the bottom line is gifted programming helps kids kind of achieve in reading, but not in math, which we hear. Why do I keep feeling that's a theme? What we've had like three or four, and I was racking my brain, like interventions that tend to move the needle on reading, but not on math. Mm-hmm. This whole connection with, you know, verbal skills.
Right. Was that the voucher study finding in D.C. or was it the other way around? I can't remember.
Now, do we think this is because of who their classmates are? Or because of what teachers are doing?
Yeah, they threw out about three hypotheses and said, you know, we can't be definitive on, you know, on the reasons.
Well,
and
the problem
sort of
is if it's who your classmates are, then it's really not particularly replicable.
Well, why is it not replicable? It says that we should do gifted and talented programs all across the country.
No,
because
not if
for
it's,
those
not
kids,
if,
right, you know, because the kids get in, get a lot of value from it.
No, not if it's who's in the classroom with you.
Right, why not? I mean, that's part of the program. Tracking debate. It's saying, you know, you should take the kids and have them all be in the same class together.
Okay, right. But unless you're cloning these kids, everybody can be in class with them.
Right.
Then there's a downside for the kids who don't get it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
But we're not supposed to be honest about that, I think.
Is that right? Yes. You mean that there'd be winners and losers?
Losers,
and
that's
yeah,
right.
We're supposed to, I think supposed to steer away from that kind of conversation.
Right. So I guess the question is, I mean, would it be if you, wherever you set the line in terms of getting into gifted kids, would it be that the kids that got in versus the kids that didn't, you know, there would always be these big differences?
Because otherwise, right, I mean, the happier story is if it's something that these teachers are doing in these classrooms that nobody else is thinking to do, then it's replicable.
Mm-hmm. Nah, that's not the answer.
Yeah, that's probably not the answer.
No. No, that's why gifted kids need to be with other gifted kids if we're going to maximize their achievement. How crazy is that?
But aren't you the fella who, you know, except when your own kids are in play, is right. in favor of finding kind of gentle ways to promote diversity so that all children get to sit next to wealthy, gifted kids?
Well, no. I mean, in the book that I was working on, you know, it very clear to me that you're only going to create those kinds of diverse schools if you're willing to do some tracking within those schools. And that's what makes it tough, is that then you just say, well, you've got a diverse school, but you don't actually have diverse classrooms. I mean, I think you can't get around the need for some kind of grouping. Mm. If you care about the higher achieving kids, maximizing their potential. If you don't care about that, then sure, lop them all in together.
And they try to do within class grouping is sort of some of what you observed, right? Yeah. It's not completely different.
And by the way, you know, all these studies that come out about how the rest of the world operates their education system and how we should emulate them, I haven't heard too many of them come right out and be honest and say, well, one thing they do is they take their most gifted kids and they let them all learn together as fast as they can. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guess what? We kind of get squeamish about that.
Yeah, and some of this, remember, some of them actually, like literally in China, take some of their best performing teachers and put them in schools. You know, with the high-performing kids, so the best kids get taught by the best teachers. So, interesting.
All right. So, Amber, by the way, can I just, for the record, say that I know that this kind of study is called a discontinuity analysis?
Regression discontinuity design. That is very impressive.
Boom. Thank you. I just want to put that out there. I'm learning from you, Amber.
Cool.
I'm learning
from you. The cutoff and the intervent. Wow, impressive. I almost had that in there, and then I went, nah, take it out.
Fordham is so much more sophisticated about research than they were, like, before you showed up.
Yes, you don't say. Oh, by the way, I'll see you in Vancouver next year for AER.
Yeah, I get the boot. He gets to go. I see how that works.
No. You went last year. Okay. What's the song?
All right, so it's a bit of a stretch, but this is a song about two old school fictional students who are decidedly not gifted. We do remember Vinny Barbarino. Reno and Arnold Horseshack, don't we? Uh-huh. This is Welcome Back, Carter.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you left about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who would have thought they'd lead you? Back here where we need ya.
Back here where we need ya.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back. 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 We always could spot a friend. Welcome back. And I smile when I think how you must have been. And I know what a scene you were learning in. Was there something that made you come back again? And what could ever lead you?
What could ever lead you?
Back here where we need you.
Back here where we need you.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
So, Rick, how sad is it that we could not find any examples of gifted music in our pop culture? Songs about gifted kids. We had to go to this, you know, Welcome Back, Cotter thing about non-gifted kids.
That's a great song, though. Welcome back.
But what was the show about gifted kids?
Howard Hessman, Head of the Class.
Head of the Class, right. But I guess they didn't really have lyrics in that song.
Robin Givhan was on that before she married Mike Tyson.
No way.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Did he ever bite her ear off, or was that somebody else?
That was Evander Holyfield in The Ring.
Ah, yes, that's right. And Chris had suggested the You're the Best, by far, the Karate Kid song. That would have been a good one, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God, that's a great movie. Okay, now it's time for Chris Irvine's What's Up With That?
I woke up this morning and I got out of bed. Had a big old cup of coffee to clear my head. Telephone rang and you wanna chat? Well, sit on down and tell me what up with that. What up with that? Yes, sir.
All right, Chris, what you got for us this week?
Well, we're coming near the close of college admissions season now, and it seems that with the advent of Facebook, the loudmouth parents of some high school graduates have taken obnoxious to a new level. A quick thanks to Rosemary Sellers for pointing this out to me. Now, don't get me wrong. I have no problem with people of any age joining the social network that is Facebook. But I start to get upset when I see comments like, Colin has been accepted to Eastern Michigan. Not his first choice, but at least he's going somewhere. Heaven forbid if Eastern happens to be the first choice for one of your friend's kids, or if somehow they have a kid who didn't get into Eastern, or anywhere else for that matter. But it doesn't stop there. The posts continue. Colin has been accepted to Eastern, MSU, Michigan, Dartmouth, and Yale. So proud, but still waiting to hear from his number one choice. I can't imagine where that might be. But a few days pass, and the drama unfolds. Colin has been accepted to Harvard! Insert 15 exclamation points. OMG, this has got to be Colin's first choice. His dreams have come true. Whew. Well, I'm sure as hell relieved. I mean, this is what the whole world for that matter, have been waiting for. Thank God we had Colin's mom for the daily updates. Pay no mind to the parents reading your posts with kids struggling to get through high school biology or with kids who got rejected to all of those schools. I'll let you in on a little secret though. Unless your kid's announcing what school he's going to help win a national championship in a sport that ends with ball, the rest of us don't care about where your baby is headed this fall. This sort of one-upsmanship is despicable and has no place in civil society. The college admissions process is stressful enough without competitive and self-centered Facebook posts from parents. There's nothing wrong with being proud of your kids, but have some class and stop living vicariously through them.
Ooh, ooh. Once again, I never know where Chris is going with these things.
Ooh,
never know.
I like that.
So, Chris, I'm impressed. Not only, I mean, some people would scour the web for these things. You seem to be scouring Facebook itself.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of the beef. Yeah.
Did you know the person in question here?
I did not. I didn't want to, you know, put anybody on the line there, so it was kind of just...
Did you use his real name?
No.
Okay, good. So, I used my
roommate's name, actually, okay.
So now, but here's the deal. Okay, man, a little complaints. Well, first of all, it's not like she's telling the whole world. She's telling her world, right? I mean, her friends on Facebook.
Sure.
So that's one. But I do think the larger point is right, that there's this question about parents who are getting ego gratification from where their kids are getting into school. Clearly what she's saying is, you know, hey, I raised a kid who's going to Harvard. I kick butt.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I understand that that's a little obnoxious. What do you think? What say you, Mr. Harvard, Rick Hess?
I think it's a good school. I think it's a bad choice to go to because I don't know anybody who actually learns anything there.
But the Facebook guy.
Oh, you know, I don't think he learned much at Harvard. If I recall the movie,
yes,
mostly he was getting dumped at
part wasn't even true. But he was a part of a social network at Harvard. That
oh, Lord.
Was very important.
Anyway, look, I think this is painfully sad and tragic. She needs to get a life.
Yeah, but this is not unusual. I mean, we've seen some articles about this. I mean, this is common now that you've got these boomer parents who are, you know, have been very involved with their kids' education from day one and are very proud. This is like their greatest accomplishment in life is that their son or daughter got into Harvard.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of sad. They need to go get a life.
Now, come on, but don't you think your mom, does your mom, is she on Facebook?
I don't know.
Rick, are you on Facebook?
No.
All right. I think
Facebook's sad, so don't get me wrong. But, I mean, yeah. I think it's especially, I mean, for people to have been getting excited about this junk back before Facebook was sad, but for somebody to be sitting there doing their little Facebooky updates and mailing around, like, where their kid's getting into is just uber sad.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, this is the, I guess, what's the bottom line? I want to tell parents, hey, these kids are not just a reflection of your intelligence and brilliance as a parent. They are their own person. Let them go. Let them go.
These parents are sad and lame.
Yeah. Hey, until you're a parent, you're not allowed to say that.
These parents are sad and lame.
All right, Rick. Well.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Chris. Thanks. That's all the time we got for this week. Until next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.